Good afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting to order at 2:31 PM. I'm going to ask if there's any public comment. All right. Hearing for none, we'll go on to approval of the minutes. Did everyone have a chance to review the minutes? Are there any questions regarding the minutes from both January and March?
Are we separating the minutes?
Yes, we'll do one vote for January and we'll do one vote for March.
We will, yes. Any questions regarding either set of minutes? Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the January minutes.
Great, thank you. Second?
Second.
Was that Paul or was that Mike?
Mike.
Don't worry, you have another chance.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, and now we will move on to the March. Do we have motion? Thank you. Second?
It's me. I'll second.
Thank you, Becky. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Yes, and Devin, I'm going to hand it over to you now for introductions.
So thank you all for coming. I will say there are a lot of new faces, especially our vice chair, who graciously stepped in since Terry was under the weather. So we'll just go around the room. It might be easier to start on the screen and then go to in person. So Liv, I'll have you kick us off.
Thanks, Devin. I'm Liv Rood with the KFH group, and I've been working on the transit development plan for the region for the past few months, and today we have alternatives.
Hi, I'm Les Tate. I work as a senior planner for Augusta County.
Hi, I'm Greg Beam. I'm the executive director of the Stanton Downtown Development Association.
And I'm Stephen Hennessy from the Department of Rail Public Transportation. I am the Grant Project Manager for CSPDC.
I'm Paula Malister. I'm a regional planner here at the CSPDC, working primarily with transportation.
And Devin Thompson, Transit Planner at the Planning District Commission.
Hi, I'm Crystal Moyers. I'm the Administrative Director of Community Outreach and Partnerships at Augusta Health, and I'll be filling Darren Clark's spot for Augusta Health.
Hi everyone, I'm Anastasia Triplett. I'm the Vice President for Finance and Administration at Blue Ridge Community College, and I am replacing Cynthia Page's spot.
I'm Jennifer Wetzel, the Deputy County Administrator for Augusta County. Welcome.
I'm Mike Kelly. I am with Wilson Workforce and Rehabilitation Center and the Virginia Department for Aging and Rehabilitative Services.
I'm Zach Beard. I'm a planner with the State Augusta-Waynesboro Metropolitan Planning Organization, SOLMPO, and the CSPDC.
I'm Luke Jude, and I'm with the City of Waynesboro Community Development.
John Blair, I'm the Acting Deputy City Manager for Stanton.
Ann Cundy, Director of Transportation for Central Shenandoah PDC.
Allison Thomberg, I'm planner with the City of Waynesboro.
And Paul Terry, Transit Rider.
I'm Rodney Rose with the City of Stanton Planning Office.
Is it my turn?
Yes.
Becky Besser, I'm a rider representative.
I'm Steve Wilson, I'm a transit manager for Virginia Regional Transit and for the Bright Bus.
Awesome. So yes, welcome to all of our new faces and normal faces. I won't call everyone old.
Thank you all for the introductions. Now we will go on to our business portion, and I'll introduce Anne, who's going to be providing an update on the Stanton Lewis Street Hub rehabilitation.
Thank you, Crystal. We are moving ahead on this project. Our current phase is we are working with Federal Transit Administration to obtain our environmental document. With that, we'll be able to secure the actual grant award from FTA, so they give you the money, and then you apply for the money, and they really give it to you. So that's where we are right now. we are, you know, again, very pleased that with this $1.2 million project to rehabilitate our hub in downtown Stanton, that a little over 80% of that is being funded by FTA. The state is contributing 16% of the cost, and then the rest is being made up with our local dollars. But that's really tremendous, both for Bright and for the city of Stanton to take a sort of down and out parking lot and make it a really lovely asset for the community. So our hope is that we'll have that environmental document in hand in the next couple of weeks, and then have our grant award. And concurrent with that, we'll be talking to a few of our on-call consulting firms, the engineering firms, to develop a scope of work and a fee proposal for them to undertake the engineering and construction administration for that project. So the intent is to issue a notice to proceed to one of them this summer. Get going. That's it. Great. Unless anyone has a question.
Is there any possibility in the future that an Athens Express stop and start there?
Huh.
You get a downtown stop and stand.
Good idea.
Potentially, but.
For another.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Anne.
Yeah. That would certainly make it more accessible. Excuse me.
No, thank you. All right. Devin, could you provide us with an update on grant applications, please?
Certainly. So the draft six-year improvement plan that has been released. And so recommended funding included grants submitted for Bright for the urban capital and operating, as well as the rural capital and operating, an additional demonstration grant for Afton Express that will take us through operations through the rest of fiscal year 23, and commuter assistance program, CAP operating funding for CSPDC's rideshare program. So all of those were recommended for funding, which was great to hear. And the Commonwealth Transportation Board will be voting on the draft SIP at their June meeting. So that once that's finalized, and those contract agreements will go into place. Stephen, did you have anything to add on the grants, or?
No, it's didn't want to work. No, everything's fine. We don't anticipate any issues. The urban grants become available on July 1, and the rural grant will become available on September 1 for reimbursements.
All right, any questions? All right, thank you, Stephen and Devin. Paula, would you please provide us with an update on Afton Express?
Sure. So April was our busiest month yet with Afton Express. We're really excited to announce that we hit a single day high of 50 rider trips in one day. So that's the best we've done since being in operation starting in September. Our average daily passenger trips for the month of April were about 38 passenger trips per day, which is up from 34 in February and March. We'll have May numbers at the end of the month, and we'll update you guys at the next meeting. We're hoping to see that continue to increase. In April, we entered into a partnership with UVA to start selling the fare cards online through UVA's parking and transportation office. So UVA employees can purchase those fare cards online directly through their employer at an additional discount. And as of this past week, they've sold 47 fare cards so far, with most of those being repeat customers, with employees buying between 2 and 3 fare cards at a time. So we're excited. That indicates that they're planning to continue to ride with us. I think one person even purchased 9 fare cards, so that's really promising. We know we've got that person for a while. But it seems to be going really smoothly, and we're hoping that that will increase efforts to attract UVA customers and people who live on this side of the mountain that are commuting over to the university and the hospital. We did make some adjustments in April to the afternoon times. So those schedule changes went into effect on April 25th, I think, or 18th?
The 18th.
So mid-month, and those afternoon times are just to reflect the increased traffic on 64. So the bus had actually been arriving at those times for a while, so now the schedule reflects that. And that's all I've got.
Paula, Does UVA offer a payroll deduction for their fare cards? Is that part of the program?
I don't think they do so right now, but they are available to purchase online through, like, I think their employee portal or website, so that UVA can actually track how many people are buying them and what employees are buying them. I think they wanted to extend additional benefits to employees to incentivize them to purchase the fare cards. So I know that they're tracking who is purchasing them, but yeah, I will follow up and see if they have any intention on doing a payroll deduction.
I know that when Augusta Health does things through payroll deduction, it seems to have a higher take rate.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you very much, Paula. Lib, I believe you're going to provide a transit development plan update on proposed projects. You're
I think
on.
You're
mute.
I'm muted. Problem one, I fixed that. Okay, let's see if I can do problem two. I will see if I can share the screen. Is it up?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not that familiar with Zoom as compared to the other platforms, so all I see is the four squares of the people, but I don't see my presentation, but I see it on my other screen, so hopefully that's good. Oh, now I see it. Okay. Again, by the time I get all these programs straight, we'll be back in person all the time. Okay, so this is our update. This is the juicy one, because these are the alternatives. So we've been working for several months on the preliminary, all the data to get here. So this is the exciting part. And just for your information, these should be considered the first draft. So if we forgot something, or if you want to see a little bit more research here or there, now's the time. And the full report, Bright had a few edits. And I just had one outstanding question. I'll talk to Devin offline, and then we can provide the full report. But this is I apologize. This is a meaty PowerPoint. It's not your typical, use the fewest words, just because there's a lot of detail with these. So I'm just giving you a warning. So the alternatives, most of them are service oriented. There's also infrastructure and technology, although most of those projects were already in the works and weren't really a function of this planning process. But I have them included in the alternatives just so we don't forget them for the plan, because there's several projects that Bright has underway that we need to carry forward into the 10-year plan. So here are the service ones. There's several, as you can see. We've written up a microtransit project. The Stanton South route, which has been kind of tossed around for several years so far, it's going forward as an alternative. Saturday paratransit, Sunday service, later hours of service, and that's focused on Waynesboro because the other routes already run relatively late. Additional rural service for rural Augusta County, that's demand response. Afton Express adjustments. Modifications to the Waynesboro circulator that we receive from either this group or the survey, modifications to Stewart's Draft Link, and then additional service between Stanton and Harrisonburg. And again, when I describe these are all just the first cut, so we certainly welcome feedback. Okay, microtransit. So I don't know if everyone knows what microtransit is, but it's basically a way for people to request trips in real time via their smartphone. And it's like an Uber or a Lyft, only it's publicly run. So the vehicle that arrives is driven by a bus driver and is paid through the system. So that sample vehicle I showed there, this is a Metco vehicle. This program is in operation in Southwest Virginia for the Mountain Empire Older Citizens. It's the agency, and Mountain Empire Transit is the transit program. And they're doing really well with it. And some of their key things to success over there are that they have the University of Virginia WISE, so they have kind of a population that would like to ride it. And so they operate it in that region. Some of the things about microtransit, it has to be a relatively small area for it to work because you want to keep that response time low. So for here, we'd probably recommend it for the outskirts of Stanton, the outskirts of Waynesboro, or even to look at if there's some lower performing fixed drought areas where you might want to transition from a fixed drought to microtransit. Again, it's not really a good application for a really large service area because the response time would be poor. But you'll start with the costs. There's a the big cost really is the software platform. It's similar to many specialized software platforms in the industry. It's about $250,000. You know, there's a few of them out there. Not that many though. The company named Via is kind of the leader, but there's some other ones also. And then there's usually an annual fee, like with any kind of like a license fee that people pay every month. And then there's also then the actual operating cost, which would be similar to what you have now in terms of the cost for the driver, the fuel, the vehicle, and all that. So that's what we have an estimate of, about $250,000 up front, and annual fees of $24,000 a year. Then the operating cost would, of course, be based on how much service you provided. But this is, with two vehicles, 5 days a week, 10 hours a day, it'd be about $280,000 annually. And we think with this level of service, you get a little over 15,000 trips if it could do 3 trips an hour. So that's just a rough estimate. And so really the advantages of this kind of a project is that it's on demand, access through smartphones. So it's kind of a cool newish idea. People don't have to call to schedule trips. They can just do it from their phone. And again, I mentioned this a minute ago, it would potentially allow streamlining of fixed routes. I know some places are replacing low performing fixed route services with microtransit. So that's an interesting idea. And it has the potential to add service in some areas not currently served. I know on the surveys we did get comments for some locations that are outside the current fixed route service area in both, actually in all the jurisdictions that are served. So that might be a way to address that. Not the super rural, but the ones that are close in. So the disadvantages, again, I mentioned, the service area has to be small in order to get that good response time. It's expensive. I mean, there's definitely significant costs associated with the software platforms, but it would be eligible, you know, for funding assistance as capital, just, you know, just like the other ones are, you know, just the other specialized software programs are. There are also riders who do not use smartphones, and for the programs in place that I've seen, they have a call-in number, so they just call the dispatcher to for those trips. Okay, so that's microtransit. The next project is really to assist the 250 connector to keep it on schedule and to allow it to serve some of the newly developing areas that it maybe doesn't have time to serve now. And this kind of a concept has been talked about really since the last TDP. Again, a similar concept just to get some relief for the 250 connector. And this would provide service between Stanton and Walmart and allow the 250 connector to go straight from hub to hub. And so this is really just a whole new route, so the costs associated with the whole new route. And we would recommend it operate on a similar schedule to the current Stanton loops. So this would just be another Stanton loop, but serving from the Lewis Street hub to the Walmart, picking up that piece that the 250 connector does now. And a vehicle would be required, and which the contractor would purchase under the current type of arrangement. And so this was included in the 2019 250 connector study. And at that time, they estimated about 25,000 annual passenger trips. And now some of these would be diverted from the current 250 ridership base. So that's what it looks like. I don't know if you can see that, but so it would come from, you know, the Lewis Street hub and then come over. I think it's Greenville Avenue. I don't know if you can see that. And then to the Stanton Mall, and then to the Walmart, and then eventually when the park and ride is done here, it could serve that also, and that could potentially be a great connection with the Afton Express and Virginia Breeze and all that good stuff. So that's the proposed routing. And then the advantages, of course, it provides a convenient connection between the hub, the Stanton Mall area, which I know is redeveloping, and Walmart. It will take this off the 250 connector. I keep saying 250, the 250 connector, which would allow it to stay on 250. And so you'd add service to that corridor, which doesn't currently, there's a segment that doesn't currently have service on 250, so that would add that. And then it allows a more direct connection between the Lewis Street Hub and Waynesboro. It doesn't have to divert over to Walmart. It reduces the mileage on the 250 connector, which will improve the reliability of the route. And so this would really allow for additional stops to be provided on the 250 connector in some of the growth areas of Augusta County, you know, around the Finchersville area, where there's a lot of new stuff and it's hard to keep adding stops to a route that is already, you know, kind of pressed for time. And again, it responds to a need that's been identified for several years. So really, the only disadvantage is that you're adding operating costs and you're really not adding a whole lot of new service area. You know, you're only adding a little bit of new service on 250, but the rest of it are, you're just rejiggering things and adding, you know, adding a route to do it. So that's Stanton South. So Saturday paratransit is important for people who filled out the Bright Access Rider Survey. This was their highest rated improvement. Currently on Saturday, people with disabilities are accommodated via route deviations, which isn't as maybe as convenient for them as paratransit is. So if we did a 9-hour service day using one vehicle, the cost would be just over $25,000 a year. And annual ridership would be relatively low just because paratransit has relatively low productivity as compared to fixed route, maybe about 842 trips, and that's based on current productivity. And the advantages are that it responds to the needs of current riders with disability, addressing their most requested improvement, and then it eliminates the need for Saturday deviation. So it would also, you know, help the fixed route out a little, fixed routes out a little bit on Saturdays too. They wouldn't have to deviate. And again, with this one, it does add operating costs without really any new service area. The next important thought is Sunday service. It really was the most requested improvement from the fixed route survey. And this proposal would provide an 8-hour service day on the Stanton Loops, the 250 connector, the Waynesboro Circulator, and the Waynesboro Circulator. And then under this protocol, the routes would deviate to accommodate people with disabilities, similar to what happens now on Saturdays. So the cost to do this for an 8-hour day for the three routes, which is four vehicles since there are two on the 250, would be about $90,000 a year, and a ridership estimate about 9,900 annually. So the advantages is that it responds to what people wanted and provides mobility on Sundays. But to me, a big disadvantage is that it eliminates the only day off of Bright, which right now, I mean, all the agencies I work for are under a fair amount of stress from the labor environment. I know VRT is experiencing challenges to be fully staffed, as are most agencies in Virginia. And also you're adding service on a day where you typically have low ridership. So that's something, this may be something for the future and not the short term, but definitely people want mobility on Sunday the way they have it the other days of the week. So the later hours comment, I looked at the hours for all the routes and they serve pretty late compared to some, you know, small urban and rural transit programs. And the ridership's pretty low at those evening hours. Now this is still, our counts were still during a COVID period. It was in 2021. So, you know, they may be a little lower than normal. So this proposal is just to do it for the Waynesboro Circulator to bring its hours of service up to be more equivalent to how the Stanton Loops operate in terms of the hours. So we're talking about adding from the current ending time of 6:30 p.m. to a new ending time of 8:30 p.m. So adding two additional hours. So this would be about $27,700 annually based on those 2 hours. And probably about 2,000 people more would ride each year. And again, this responds to the needs of current riders addressing, this was the third most requested improvement for the riders. And it allows Waynesboro residents, riders, not necessarily residents, but riders to stay later at their jobs and other activities of daily life. And then the disadvantage is really that this is kind of a disadvantage of any kind of service you add on the ends. You're gonna have a little bit lower ridership on those 2 hours than you do throughout the day. And also might be kind of difficult for the driver scheduling, depending on the way in which VRT currently constructs its schedules. You know, I don't know how that would mess with you know, if they already have two shifts and this would throw it into an odd situation with runs, but that's something that, you know, BRT, we can get some feedback from them. So that's the thought about the circulator and their hours. Now, this next one, I was kind of hesitant to write this up because I recall during the last TDP, we actually cut rural Augusta County service because so few people used it. But we did get, you know, comments on the public survey that wanted some service in the rural parts of the area. And it was all over the county, here, there, everywhere. It wasn't anything that could really be addressed or anything fixed. Again, because it's rural areas and, you know, over here, over there, everywhere. So the thought for this one was to implement some, maybe a zonal demand response service. So just devote one vehicle to the county and have it serve different areas, different days of the week. Possibly, you know, have half the county served maybe the north of I-64 250 on a few days a week, and then south of there served on the other days of the week. And maybe like a 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday schedule. That would be about $154,000 a year and would also need a vehicle. And then the ridership, so you don't get a whole lot of bang for the buck with rural demand response. So if you're pretty low productivity just because you can only get from point A to point B in, you know, X amount of time. So it'd be maybe about $3,600 annually. So the advantages to this concept is that it meets a need that was articulated by stakeholders. It uses a demand response model that's better suited for the rural parts of the county. And it would provide additional mobility options for Augusta County residents so they can get to their necessary appointments and visiting or wherever they need to go. The disadvantages really is that it's a pretty low level of service. So you couldn't use this to get to work, you know, unless you have a very light work schedule. And it would add a service that would likely have rather low productivity given the low density areas served. So I know that's always a little bit of a thought, adding new service because of the, now there's productivity is built into the funding agreements. So that's something to think about when you're adding these kind of services. So the next thing after Express, I recently heard, and you heard too a little bit ago, that Afton Express has been approved for funding for a third vehicle. Did I hear that? You told me that, right, Devin?
Yeah.
That's already a thing?
Yeah, so that demonstration grant, that additional piece will allow us to add additional frequency to meet the needs of the 12 shift workers at UVA.
Yeah, so I didn't, I had written that up as a full alternative, but it's already going to happen. So I'm going to modify that in the write-up that you haven't seen yet. But so there will be a third vehicle, which will allow some schedule adjustments. And I think that will address some of the comments that we heard about the Afton Express in terms of there being a few holes in the schedule that people would like to see at particular times of the morning. So that'll be really good. I think that'll address some of the comments that we heard from Afton Express riders. In addition to that, and this is what I did write up, there were a lot of comments requesting a stop at the Fontaine Research Park on UVA's campus. And really, I looked on the map and it could be pretty easily accommodated either as the first stop or the last stop, just to where it's located. So it would be a small incremental increase in expenses just by adding an extra stop. But I think that it would be pretty fruitful, because even just if the few people that ask rode, there would be 1,000 annual trips, and then probably a lot more because, as you see there, 1,350 people work in that location, and it's really considered a little bit too far to walk from the nearest Afton Express stop. So this would really meet a need articulated by riders, and the key thing is here is potential riders, so that would be good to get a few more people on that service. Of course, the disadvantage is you're adding travel time. Though, like I said, it appears it could be served relatively easily, but of course, when you're looking on a map, you don't know about traffic. So that's something we'd have to, a couple options of how to do it, but I think we need to talk to VRT and ask them about their operating experience in that area to see what the best, you know, how the best way to get there would be. But there seems to be a couple options to hit it on the way in and on the way out. So I think that's pretty viable, especially if you're going to get another bus on the route, because that loosens things up a little, I would think, in terms of time. We have a couple things for the Waynesboro Circulator. These were two requests, and I'm not sure if they're feasible, just depending on the timing of the route. But one request was to add Vector Industries as a regular stop, and the other one was to consider service along West Main Street between Lou DeWitt and Rosser. So the Vector Industries stop we'll talk about first. So this is about a half a mile from the current DMV stop. Vector Industries is a nonprofit business. It trains and employs people with disabilities. Many of the employees there don't drive, and there's currently four people who use Bright Access to get there to and from on a regular basis. So for this one, it really wouldn't cost. There's two ways to do it. So if you did the out and back option, you would add some incremental costs associated with that extra mile. And then if you have our second option, you would actually reduce the mileage a little bit on the route. So anyway, if those four people rode, there would be about 1,248 annual trips. And there, I think that's if they just rode 3 days a week. And then there may also be additional ridership from people who currently get there via family and friends. So the advantages, again, would be it would meet the need that was articulated by stakeholders. It provides service to an area nonprofit that employs people with disabilities, so it's kind of a feel-good thing to do. It also may reduce demand for ADA paratransit to the site, and this is kind of critical, which information I don't know, is if those riders are able to use the fixed route. So to me, that would be key. I mean, if the four people who Bright is currently taking there can't use a fixed route, then I don't know if it's worth doing. But if they can use a fixed route, I think it's probably worth looking into, because that would, you know, there your demand would go down on the ADA paratransit that's, you know, more expensive to provide. So I'll show you the two options. So the out and back option might make the route too long. I think that's pretty stretched. I don't know if you could fit another mile in there. And then the other one would eliminate some residential stops in the center of Waynesboro. They're not well used, but they're there, and they are used a little bit. So here's the map. So here's the route. And right now it does this. Serves DSS and comes back. And so here's Vector Industries. So one thing to do would be just to serve Vector Industries, you know, turn around in their parking lot and then get back on route. This would be close to a mile between there and back. So that's option one, and that's it's easy. It doesn't really mess with anybody. It doesn't take away anything from anybody else, but it would add a little stress to the route. The other option is to conserve Vector, keep going up here, and then make this right-hand turn, and then pick up the current route of social services, eliminating this section. I'm sorry, you couldn't see the cursor, could you? Let me do this again. So here's the, this is the short option that's, but would add a mile to the route, and then this is the other option is to come this way. But that would eliminate all of this. And as you see, these are low ridership stops, but it is kind of a residential area. And if you add up these stops together, you know, that's gonna add up over time. And I don't know if you want to do that in terms of taking away service from this whole area. So maybe you could shorten it. You know, if you did this option, maybe shorten your route through here. I'm not sure. Maybe come up this way, or you know, maybe shorten it a little bit through there. So there might be some options to do it.
Oh, hey, Liv.
To do both.
Are we on there? Liv, can you hear us?
I can't.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. Yes.
Luke has a question.
Could you add a small little spur? You know, where it's on Poplar down there, it goes over the railroad tracks and turns left on Ivy there up to Mountain View Apartments. Could you add just a small little spur there up like two blocks to get the middle of that area and then come back on and do the loop around to social services? Or I don't know if Steve, if that makes any sense, but... if you could just hit the middle...
Yeah, because I was looking at a snow route through there, too, but the Mountain View's a pretty hot stop. It's a pretty...
Yeah, well, I'm just saying if you just, from that point... did one little two-block spur and came back and went to Mountain View.
Right.
And then eliminated everything else in the middle there. Just trying to think of some way that you could get.
Yeah, the bridge.
Yeah, and that could potentially eliminate that stop, Devin, where you had the complainer.
Going. I want to keep that one. No, bridge. going straight across bridge would be a viable option, but you're knocking off the ones on Fontaine and stuff.
Okay.
But right there.
Right here.
Yeah, right where the cursor is going across.
Does it have to be consistent every hour, or could it just be?
I thought of that. Could you serve a vector like 2 hours out in the morning, and who would that displace? And
maybe. You know, that's a really good point. I think that would be perhaps a good answer, because then you wouldn't kill the route all day long in terms of time, and it probably would not be used midday, because I assume, you know, once you talk to a vector and figure out what hours are they coming and what hours are they leaving.
It's probably consistent.
I think they're kind of flexible and can, you know, can mold their hours a little bit to accommodate the times the bus gets there, as opposed to the other way around. You know, it may be a first run, 4 o'clock run scenario with them.
You may be able to. I think I've said that you may be able to reach some ridership with disabilities that you have
right.
not been able to reach before.
Yep, that you've got this target area in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be really helpful for them. I mean, they requested it, and it's really not that far off the track. It just depends on how stressed this route is, and could you tweak it somewhere else to make up for that mile? And then, so I guess like this one, I think would probably just eliminating this, I think, wouldn't be a great idea, just because I think these do add up over time, even though they're all small. You know, they could be upwards of. It could be equivalent to, you know, a bigger stop once if you added those all together, but maybe consolidate a little bit because it is a little circuitous through here.
Especially if you're making the exception for them, they probably would work with you on time. I might be wrong.
Right.
But they kind of said they would, you know,
could
move their times to accommodate us. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the first Waynesboro option. The second one. I don't know about this one. The West Main Street. So I think it's valid to serve that corridor. I'm just not sure if it could be accomplished in a timely fashion with the one route that's in existence now. There probably would be a little bit additional ridership because you are serving more transit origins and destinations, and it was requested. But here I'll show you the map. I'm just not sure if it's feasible. So the blue is what the route does now. And then the request was to serve this corridor, which makes a lot of sense because there's definitely transit origins and destinations on this corridor, and then it would come back to Walmart this way. The issue is it's a lot longer. A lot of it is because you have to go around like this. I don't think there's a way to do it this way. So that's the problem. It adds, I think it's 1.3 miles in each direction, taking this route instead of this route. So this route really does not produce any ridership because there's no stops along here. And this is basically just single family homes for the most part and some institutional kind of things. Whereas this has small houses and some shopping and some stuff, stuff that people go to on a regular basis. So I'm totally on board with the concept. I'm just not sure you can do it with the time. So I don't know, maybe VRT or you want to chime in here. What do you think about this? Also, this would be a repeated segment because this is on the 250 connector already.
Right. Well, we talked about that yesterday. So you would be able to move, if you ran there, you'd be able to move the Amazon stop to that and negate having to take the 250 in there.
Was the primary request for that because of the dialysis center? Was that
not that I know of? It came on the survey because you served that corridor, and then also when Devin and I were out riding, we rode the bus, and a fellow that was on the bus requested it, and it may have been the same person who filled out the survey. I'm not sure. Requested, could we look at that?
Because I've also heard anecdotally that since UVA Dallas has moved out of Augusta Health's medical office suites, that it's not on the bus route, and that's been an issue for patients.
Right.
That's why.
And it's a driving force on the on the paratransit for Waynesboro. Uh-huh. The other scenario is you wouldn't necessarily have to go out Ross, or you could go, I don't know what that road is, it runs by those apartments up there, but we get a lot of questions from folks.
This one?
Yeah, right through there.
Yeah. So maybe that would
kind of... And it pops out right out by Amazon. It comes right out that area. There's a stop right back down on Rosser where you were. There's a stop there at what used to be the Cadillac dealer, and then Augusta Health had it. And I don't know who's got it now.
Okay, so that would be a little bit
slimy.
Yeah, well, Augusta Health's still there, and the Tractor Supply's right there. Yeah.
So, you know, you may consider... Instead of taking that whole loop to it, kind of making that cut through that area there would be.
I think that I was just thinking about this Waynesboro's funded smart scale project for West Main, also that's about to make that corridor very pedestrian accessible and make it a lot safer, which would be very transit supportive.
So, you know, and I don't know what. You know what it is out West Main, you know, before you get to Hopeman, I don't know what you do. That's a residential area too, but I mean, you know, you're trading one residential area that you don't stop in for another one that you may not stop in, but certainly that end up there.
You're hitting a lot more apartment complexes on that West.
Yeah, right at that end, as you get up there.
Where are you talking about?
Right through there where the sign, where it says 250 on the West Main. From that from that area up there and where Amazon is and up there, it's pretty active.
Yeah. So that way, so right now, I guess Waynesboro folks would either just make this walk or they would take the 250, right?
Yeah.
Transfer, take the 250.
And like I said, that little corridor where the apartments are, you know, it's an either or. Do I walk down Amazon or do I walk down to Lou DeWitt?
Yeah. So that's a thought, you know. We'll keep it on the list, and we can change the routing to use this instead if you think that's could you get out, is it okay making a turn here?
Yeah, I don't nothing pops in my mind of being prohibited.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're gonna
bridge. Narrow bridge.
Yeah, it's one lane bridge right there.
Yeah. Oh, we don't have one of those yet. So.
Well, Amazon's gonna be employing lower wage workers that may need to be riding the.
Okay, so that's a viable option. Then, like I said, my only concern is time. You know, time on the route.
You know, and then you're going by the other end of Hope, and I don't know. I'd have to sit down and take a crayon and.
Okay.
Make a circle.
The next concept is to tinker with the Stewart's Draft Link to make it bidirectional instead of a loop. It's currently a counterclockwise loop, and it's good if you're traveling, if you want to go to Augusta Health or somewhere a little further away, but it's pretty terrible if you just want to go somewhere local in Stewart's Draft because you have to ride all the way around. So the thought was to make make it into a bidirectional route. And so it's relatively cost neutral, and you would probably lose some riders that you would lose the people who travel in between Waynesboro and Augusta Health, but you might gain some local riders. And so the advantages are it would significantly decrease the travel time for the local Stewart's Draft trips. That's really the purpose of the alternative. It would also eliminate a duplicative route segment between Waynesboro and Augusta Health, because that actually, I think it's even at the same time that the 250 travels between those two locations, and the Waynesboro, and the Stewart's Draft Link does the same thing. So that you don't really need to do that. I mean, people have to transfer, but you know, the bus is doing the same thing, and so it would reduce the mileage a little bit. And like I mentioned, it would cause a transfer. So I'll show you what the map looks like. So right now, you know, it does the big loop. I think these two recently went to call in. Is that right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so that reduces the mileage somewhat. So it does this big loop. And so you can see, like, if you live here and you just want to go maybe to here, it's fine on the way, but on the way home, you've got to go all the way around. So that's the idea, is to reduce, you know, the travel time for the local people. So the thought was you'd start at the multifamily housing and serve that, and then you would serve this way and just go to Walmart and have people transfer there if they need to go up here. and then go back the same way you came. So that way it's an out and back, linear, reducing that big loop.
Would you consider like a teardrop instead of going to Shenandoah and the States, tearing around right there where it says Augusta Farm Apartments, somewhere through there, the school is through there, and you can cut
through. Oh, right here?
Yep, you can cut through and pick up at that little triangle right there.
Yeah, this is where the high school is, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility, too.
Just kind of make you a little teardrop on the end.
Yeah, you just got to think about how it would affect. Let's see, what would happen if you got on? Well, it wouldn't be that much
yeah,
of a ride.
You still have to go to Augusta States, and there is somebody that's on there regular. So
the big difference would be if people are coming up here, and they do use the bus to get up here, definitely on this route. As you can see, there's a brown, that's a ridership blob there. But they could just pick it up here, or, you know, assume it would have to be timed with the 250. So that people could do that, but I believe it already is.
So do you think you could do that and do 2 an hour?
Would that be an adjustment? I'm not sure. How do you handle it now? Because you have more than an hour, don't you?
You know, it's
the schedule's an hour.
It's an hour, and it's got, you know, let's say 15 minutes to play with in there. Maybe less than that, but yeah. Do
you have one bus doing that?
Yep.
Because it's a lot of miles.
Yeah, it's 12 times a day, so you have all day to get it right.
I was trying to figure that out, because when I was looking at the mileage, it was a lot of miles, and I was wondering how you did it in an hour, actually. Because I think this would have the same problem. It would be, you know, a similar amount of, it would definitely be a little bit stressful. I think you'd have to play with it a little bit to see if it could be accomplished. The travel speed here is going to be pretty fast. But, you know, it's going to be slow through here and slow on either end. And then this would be, you know, relatively quick.
And there was consideration, we haven't heard from that person, about the apartments there.
Which apartments?
Stone Drive. I don't know what they're called, but Stone Drive is the entrance to that.
Where is that?
That's got to be before, it's in between Broadmoor and before the Target, so somewhere.
So somewhere in here?
Yeah, probably right there, that little blue area is right there.
I think what they were talking about was like 48 apartments that has been changed. They got approved for like 25 townhomes there, but it could still be a need.
Yeah, there's some townhomes there.
So this is in the planning process?
It's an approved rezoning for 25 townhouse lots that are in the front of that mixed-use development.
Okay. Well, that's good. That'll help the route. So that's another thing to think about. Today's about throwing all the ideas out there, not about figuring it out. So it's to start to sink in and kind of whittle out what's good and bad and irrelevant. So, excuse me. The next one, I'm not sure if this one's feasible yet either, but we did hear that people wanted some more direct service between Stanton and Harrisonburg. It's really been since the 2015 TEP, and it was somewhat addressed in a regional study, but there just wasn't the will to go all the way to Harrisonburg with the Afton Express yet. So the concept really is to have a commuter-type service between Stanton and Harrisonburg, between 6 to 10 a.m. and 2 to 6 p.m., to get people who work and go to school more directly than they can do on BRCC shuttles, which of course is geared to the needs of BRCC. So it would be kind of expensive. You know, it's $290,000 a year, and two additional vehicles would be needed. We think about 12,750 people would ride it annually. It does meet a need that was articulated by the public. It would provide a pretty direct connection between Stanton and Harrisonburg, which of course is good for ridership. That's what people want. It would make you could get to Harrisonburg earlier and you get to Stanton earlier than you can now using the BRCC shuttles. It could potentially also be linked to the Afton Express in the future to increase interregional connectivity so that potentially, you know, the Harrisonburg folks could get to Charlottesville. And vice versa. So the disadvantages are, of course, it would somewhat compete with the current BRCC shuttle. I'm not sure the extent, but, you know, it definitely would take some riders away from there. It wouldn't take the BRCC riders away, but possibly some others. There might not be enough demand to support this type of service in the near term. And also, service on I-81, of course, would be subject to traffic delays, which would affect the schedule reliability. So we didn't do a map for this one because it's just, you know, it would, I think, do we do a map? I know, I can't remember if I did a map, but I didn't put it in the presentation. But the idea would be for the route to go up to, through Verona and then get on the, you know, to serve the county complex and then head over to 281 from Verona. So the county complex would get service on the route. And then head up to Harrisonburg and JMU, and then back the same way. So this one too, this may be before its time. It may be something to think about. But people wanted it, so I wrote it up. So the next ones, so these, we didn't put as much effort into this because some of this just reflects things that are already in the works. So I'm just relaying it to keep it on the in the mix because it'll be in the draft plan. So these reflect the Lewis Street Hub improvements. We'll reflect that in the plan. The concept of adding additional shelters and benches over time. We have some suggestions in the report about locations. So basically locations that have high ridership and don't currently have a shelter place to wait. The next thing we talk about are improved connectivity. Of course, Stanton Crossing is first on the list. And Devin, you mentioned something about Sanger's Lane. What's going on there? Can you? I wasn't clear on that one.
That was the Smart Scale project, right? That added the bus pullout at Sanger's Lane. So there was bus pullout on, I guess, either side of that Sanger's Lane intersection. And some pedestrian improvements.
Okay. So I'll get some more information about that to make sure that's in the plan. And then in terms of technology, Bright already has a plan that it's working through. It has the 2017 ITS plan. So basically we're gonna just update the numbers so that to reflect inflation and carry that forward into this plan because they're well on their, you know, they've started implementation. COVID derailed things a little bit. But there's they have a solid list of things that they want to do. Again, it's in the full report. I didn't repeat it here, but there's a lot of improvements that have already been, fully thought out. And so they'll go in the plan we'll attach 3 years to them, updated from the plan because, you know, they did get a little behind schedule as everybody did with COVID. So those will be in there too. And then the other things that will be in the plan are just routine inflationary costs and that kind of thing. So here's where we are. We need to make decisions about all those projects. If there's any other things that we did not talk about and you want to see in the plan reflected, we can add those in. And if we need to do any research, we can add that in. And then once the projects are chosen, we'll do the draft TDP report. And we'll give it to you for review, and then we'll make any needed adjustments, and we'll do the final report, and then the board will adopt it after it's all in good shape. So I guess I want to go back to, did we leave anything out that you can think of? And you don't have to tell me right now. You know, certainly you can think about it, and we will send out the full report within the next week or so. I just have to get with Devin about one question I had, and then you'll see the more details. There's a few more details in there. But like I said, this was pretty detailed for a PowerPoint, but you know. Questions?
Just informational, I guess, question. The microtransit would be a smartphone application based. Has there been any conversation about a Bright Transit smartphone application that folks could use, not just the microtransit, but all of Bright? I know our students, even those with significant disabilities, can navigate that app pretty easily.
Yeah.
A smartphone application that can track where the buses are, what the schedules are, even make a request for call service. Just wondering if that's anywhere in the conversation.
Yes, that is one of the projects in the ITS plan.
Okay.
We have, it's not an app, but for Afton Express, we've contracted with Textmarks to receive just text message updates about service, you know, delays or weather or anything that might change service so that you know in real time. But yeah, I think right now we're just trying to get the you know, ridership and fare information collection system on the buses and back at dispatch, and then phase two is the more rider facing
gotcha.
Phase of the ITS.
And that will be in the plan, you know, pulled over from their ITS study from a couple years ago.
Liz, the cost per ride on a lot of these is obviously range widely from Sunday services being more feasible, county service being $50 a ride or whatever. How, when you look at that, knowing a lot about other transit services, what do you think about the efficiency of any of these potential service increases, especially compared to like what our cost per ride is right now for the whole system?
So I would be a little concerned about the rural service, just because you really have to think about that. If you have the wherewithal to provide that service, that does end up being, you know, between $30 and $50 a trip. And it's hard to know exactly because the ridership estimates are pretty preliminary and based on, we both basically just do most of them based on current productivity and typical productivity, but until you put the service out there, obviously you don't know exactly how many people are going to ride. So we try to be somewhat conservative. But I'd be a little hesitant about services that are, you know, over $30 a trip, just because you're thinking about these are public, you know, public resources. But then again, if that's what people want and you're willing to spend that, you know, how important is mobility for rural citizens? So it's almost more of it's half political and half economic discussion, you know. But you know, obviously, anything where it's more dense, the trip per trip cost is going to be a lot better. And right now, the per trip costs are not great because of the COVID reduction in ridership. So it's, you know, the per trip is so driven by ridership, which is a little bit out of your control. I mean, you have control over what service you put out there, but you don't have control over whether people use it. So I think, you know, that's the big kicker is trying to figure out which of the services are going to be most used and most helpful to the riders. I mean, when we talk about feasibility, it's really like anything's feasible. It's just like how much are you politically willing to spend on it, you know, per what? You know, I think that's really a local thought. And that was one of the reasons why the Augusta County Rural Service went away, you know, in 2015, or I guess it wasn't until 2017, because the per trip cost was so expensive, you know, that it wasn't deemed feasible for the public to, you know, absorb that cost.
When you just start giving people tokens for free taxi rides.
What's that?
When you start just giving people tokens for free taxi rides.
For taxis that aren't there. Was that when the Cremora was there? Though? Was that when the bus ran up to Cremora and probably over to the airport or something? Before my time. Yeah. I think that's what that was.
But there was also like the Augusta County that went to like Churchville or Craigsville.
Craigsville once a week.
One lady
rode. Yeah, we still get the Cremora call all the time. Hey!
But it would be a way. I mean, if you're going to do it, that I think that would be the way to do it. Just zonal and you know, here's some basic level of service that if you do have an appointment, you could schedule it around knowing it comes to your area, you know, on Tuesdays and Thursdays or what have you. So, I mean, that would be the least expensive way to do it. But it's still, you know, on a per trip basis, it would not be cheap. But on a per service basis, it wouldn't be that expensive.
And we haven't gotten any inquiries at the county about that type of service. So I would lean to not go there.
Not a high priority, yeah. It was really just a response to when people said they wanted service for here, there, and everywhere, which clearly would not be something that you'd put a route there, because then you really would be looking at a terrible per trip cost, because you don't have enough demand.
So how do you want us to go about getting feedback on this list?
Liv, would it be easy for us to just distribute the PowerPoint and maybe the chapter, and then you all can take time to review individually as well, and then you can shoot me any feedback and I'll share it with Liv? Is that the easiest?
That makes sense to me. Like I said, we can get, I have just one small question about the report itself, and then we can get that out. And then we can maybe have a deadline for comments, from the committee.
Can I draw on the PowerPoint?
We'll get you that crayon, Steve.
All right, thank you.
And then you get to approve everything that we comment on and say yay or nay. That's not going to work, or it will work.
If we have any more resources to spend on studying stuff, I know I'm a broken record, but I'm not soon anyway, but I think it'd be a travesty to not at least study bringing the Appen Express to the downtowns. Like, transit is all about density, and we have a transit service that could be very useful, but it doesn't stop in any of our dense areas. You have to drive
right
out to it. It has multiple legs. I just think it'd be so much more valuable if we could get. And I know it's not. We have a good thing going, so I don't want to rock the boat too much. But
I considered using it and couldn't.
Do you want me to put that as an alternative?
To think about numbers or some idea of what it would take in the future if that ever became a possibility, I think it would be really helpful.
I mean, the way I look at it, it might be feasible on certain trips. So I think that would be the way to approach it, to not do every trip that way, but to have a few, and you might have more flexibility with the third bus, but to have select trips start in the downtown, and maybe they skip one of the park and rides, just in terms, when you think about travel time and convenience for people on the bus. I mean, that might be the way to approach that, is that certain trips, select trips, go from downtown, and other trips go from the park and ride, and not chain it all together so that it would add too much to the travel time.
Yeah, you might get access to a very different ridership.
If it connected with another bus downtown, you wouldn't need to worry about parking.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the thing. I mean, that would be really a high reason to do it would be to connect with your current ridership so that they could use the service. And they probably don't need to park a car. They probably just need access from a bus. But yeah, I think starting at the hub, at the Lewis Street hub, and at the, I guess for Waynesboro, it wouldn't really be the Waynesboro. It would be the downtown you're talking about, right?
Yeah, Waynesboro suburbs, you got to go out of the way.
Starting one.
Well, and I'll just throw in the 2 cents about the Lewis Street hub. You're half a dozen or more traffic lights on the road.
Well, if you did that, then maybe you wouldn't stop at the Danton Park and Ride. You just get going.
Right. Yeah, I'm just.
Yeah.
Getting
going on Richmond Road, depending on the time of day, either. Like, cruise right through, or you hit every light. You just don't know.
Sometimes
it takes me 15 minutes just to get to the interstate.
Maybe just a study, though, that could give us some idea of what would take. I just think it's a totally different service. Really valuable.
Yeah.
It's worth at least
that. Okay, we'll definitely look into that, and we'll write it up as another Appen alternative.
I think, what if you just make out a recommendation that's an MPO study for a upcoming year? I mean, it can be in the TDP, but the TDP is the transit planning element of the MPO's 25-year plan, so I think that would be the
Well, we'll set some parameters and lay the foundation, but not try to get into the dirty details of exactly.
Pay for it.
Yeah, again, don't want to do anything that disrupts the consensus of support for the existing service. I mean, it's been really valuable.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a good suggestion, though. I mean, I know here, I think they're not doing it in COVID, but so I live in downtown Frederick, and we have commuter bus service that serves a regional park and ride lot. And prior to COVID, they also extended the service into the city. So I could walk to the instead of having to drive, and so that was really nice. I think since COVID they've did away with that because not many people are riding the commuter bus. But I mean that was a nice example where select trips, did go into the city for people who didn't have cars and typically walk. So that it'd be a similar example to that. Any more questions? I know it's a lot. You probably have to read it more closely to have more questions, but just keep thinking too if I missed anything so we can get that in there. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you, Liv.
Thanks, Liv.
Thank you.
Sorry I couldn't come in person. I really wanted to, but I'm in the middle of a triennial review. That one of the other things that KFH does are triennial reviews, and I'm in the middle of doing one for for the Louisville transit system, and it's a lot. So we're doing them virtually. So that's the good news is it's virtual, so I actually could come to this meeting also, but the bad news is I couldn't come in person.
Thank you, Liv, very much. Great discussion, everyone. I think we all know our homework. So thank you. Steve, you have some contractor general operations updates?
Really? So Tuesday, April 19th, the mask mandate was suspended, stopped, null and voided, whatever it was. There wasn't a big, throwing of hats or celebration, or there wasn't anybody saying, this is wrong. So it just kind of went on. The reality is, I can say this now after the fact, it was kind of depending on who the driver was and who the core audience was on compliance on that to start off with. So, anyway, now I made my confession. There's no rules or regulations, so a lot of the people that I was talking about either wore them or they didn't wear them are still doing that, given some of our drivers are 70-plus, so some of them feel more comfortable wearing masks, same way with passengers and stuff. And some of it is in response to who's on the bus, whether the demand person on the bus is wearing a mask, the driver may put one on to reflect that. So, but there are masks still available. I don't know what that inventory is, but it's quite a few.
You should have 4,000.
Okay, I'll take your word for it, and I'll go check. So we're still making those available to folks that are asking for it. So, but it's not an operational concern like we've had in the past. Haven't had any COVID cases in the last month or so, maybe 2 months. I'm not sure, even what I've reported, but haven't had anybody call in and say that, I've got symptoms or whatever. So. Haven't had any delays about that. We have had some poison oak. We have had some flu, some other things of that nature, but that's just regular stuff. Passenger counts are on the rise. They're fluctuating, so they're kind of crazy. January was a snowy month, so that was kind of odd for us. It was under 10,000 people for that for us. So we had a 10% dip from last year, but. The rest of it looks pretty good. So it was around 12,000 riders in February, and it was up to 14,000, a little above, for April. So it's picking up. Like I said, nothing consistent. There's still kind of wild swings when you look at the percentages. But so ridership in a nutshell over the past pandemic period. In 2019, it was an average of 23,000 folks a month. 2020 was 14,000 a month. 2021 was 13, and right now we're at 13. So I'm still holding out hope that that's going to pick up as we go on through the year, and we'll get back up. We certainly won't get up to 2019 numbers, but we ought to be able to surpass some of the last couple of years. So. We are looking for qualified drivers. I am working with BRCC. What's his name? Jim Butler? Is that who it is? I wouldn't test your knowledge because
third week, so I'm not sure.
You could have just as easily jumped up and gave me the right name, and that would have been okay too. But we're working on that for drivers. part of our deal is like flipping or turning truck drivers and stuff like that to get them a passenger endorsement. We still have to go through this, what is called the entry level driver training program. It's at least a week up there. It is around $2,400 and we waive all of it. The state waives all of it but 800, but I haven't looked into if there's any grants available for the remaining eight. So that's a large chunk for somebody to bite off to become a you know, a bus driver from whatever you were doing before. So we're still working. School's getting ready to let out. I'll get a couple people from that. That'll be a short-term kind of respite, unless I steal them somehow from going back. But that wouldn't be right, would it? and some of the other considerations are, is, you know, wages in a competitive market. I mean, everybody is you know, raising wages and stuff like that. And we got retirees. My joke is people come in looking for part-time job, and I tell them we got full-time hours with part-time benefits. So it is a lot of retirees are just, you know, they're doing the math. Can I touch the nest egg now, and what do I have to sacrifice and not have to go to work? So these are real things. Not a lot of young people coming into the driving profession. So we also have this big behemoth over there right across the street from us coming in. So that's a concern too. So we'll see. I have a feeling they're going to rotate folks in there pretty quick, though. They have an operational expectation. This is Amazon, the large list. They have an operational expectation that may be hard for some folks to meet. So we're moving forward with our changes to the Northwest Loop. Devin is hand drawing those brochures as we speak. So that should be in place. And along that, Paul and I have talked about doing snow routes. Since last year was the last year we had snow for two or three years. But it would be beneficial to be able to post that out and then get that out to folks that we're not going to be here today, but we'll be here and here. So we will work on that during the year. Reviewing the TDP stuff like that. So I did read it a couple times. And we are gathering information for the ITS project, the mobile data collection system, which will be beneficial. It'll help us. So it's looking at ADA, you know, scheduling, deviations on routes, other things like that. So moving forward with that. So we're staying busy. I'm driving more than I want to. Everybody is. So behind on reports. Just take it a day at a time. So yeah, we're doing good though.
Thank you, Steve. Any questions for him? You're getting off easy.
I swear, it must have just been so informative.
All right, thank you. Does anyone else have any other business to bring to the group?
I will tack on to what Steve was talking about. We did start with the intelligent transportation system, so we were working with Kimley Horn. They're providing us technical assistance on the request for proposals process. So we have gotten started with that. So they'll be talking to VRT folks to learn what exactly they'll be looking for, and they'll issue an RFI to get more information based on our needs and what vendors have available. So we'll keep you updated as that keeps moving more along.
Anything else? All right, I think our next meeting will be July 13th. From what I've heard, even though I'm new, our July meeting is normally canceled, but this year, because we are in the process of the TDP, we're gonna leave it on the calendars at this point. So keep that July meeting on your calendars, even if you're used to getting off of that July meeting, please, and Devin will be in touch closer to the time. If there's no other business, then we will adjourn the meeting at 3:44. Thank you all so much.
Thanks for the water, Devin.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
I think I'm keeping
warm. Thanks, Devin.
Thanks, Devin. Oh, Devin, while I have you,
yeah.
Come with fire, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Going to you, Ron.